Welcome to the best damn podcast ever. I'm internet funny man Blake Buck, joined this week by Justin Ficarotta of indie development fame.
How's it going?
And of course, we've got William Miller back again of Resurrection fame.
How you doing, Blake Buck?
Doing good. Now, first of all, before we start this show, I wanted to get a few things out of the way. Number one, I have to clear up a little thing that happened last week. First of all, two things that happened, really. Number one, you remember how we were? I was jumping all over Craig Reed for not editing the show? Turns out, the file wasn't in the Dropbox, and it's my fault.
You know, I think I...
Naturally.
I saw that.
Yeah, you know...
I saw that file upload. I was like, did they record another show without me, or did Blake Buck just screw the pooch on this one?
Well, you know, I could have sworn I uploaded it, and then I thought it was there, and we need more communication, I think, is the lesson learned here. So, apologies all around to Craig Reed.
Well, this is not something I can ever get on you
about. I'd also like to apologize about last week, because I was listening back to the show today. Man... When I heard that William Miller was coming on the show... Oh, damn it. Are you still there?
Lost you.
Check. 1, 2, check.
Golden Axe.
Golden Axe.
Anyway, when I found out... I have another apology. When I found out that William Miller was coming on the show, I was drinking at the time. And once I found out that fact, Blake Buck started drinking a lot. So, last week's show, I was listening to it. Blake Buck a little drunker than he usually is when he does this show. Not to say that I'm sober ever during this show, but apologies nonetheless. Anyway, this is your best damn podcast ever for Wednesday, August 24th, 2011. Alright, let's kick it off with some news. Justin Fick, what you got for us?
Alright, so Sony is saying that John Collar, this is their Sony's director of hardware marketing, is saying that mobile and tablet gamers will move to the PS Vita. So this is right after Sony dropped the price of the PlayStation 3 to $250, and they're sort of They're really hyping up the Vita to sort of take over the mobile space.
You know, they've been saying, I mean, I'm sure they're saying this again, but it seems like they've sure been saying this for a while now. Like, I don't know. What do you think, Justin Fick? Does it have the potential?
It's definitely got potential. I don't know if it's gonna, you know, take over the mobile space. Like, it's not gonna take all the gamers away from iOS and the iPad and stuff, but I can definitely see it sort of taking the crown over from Nintendo.
Sure.
Just the 3DS has kind of fallen flat in every possible way that it can, and I can't say for sure until the Vita launches and we see how the games are on it, how the lineup is, but just everything about it seems really cool and solid. So I mean, it's nothing groundbreaking by any means, but it's just it's the iteration that I think the PSP needed. You know, a second analog stick, incorporating things like a touch screen, getting rid of the fucking UMD drive. So I mean, sort of getting rid of the
And I keep forgetting, what is the memory going to be on the Vita now? Is it going to just be flash, or I don't know?
I believe so. Yeah.
Cube? Well, I don't know what they're doing these days. Sony's got all this new technology.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I think it's flash. I don't know if they're still doing a stick or not. I'm pretty sure it's flash.
Now, William Miller, I sent you a new story about this. I don't know if... Did you read this
thing? Let me tell you something, Justin Fick. So I guess GameSpot wanted a counter-argument to this, so they went digging.
Okay.
And they dug this guy up, Lyle Hall, who's the CEO of Heavy Iron Studios. Famous for such greats as SpongeBob, Ratatouille, The Incredibles, and most recently, UFC Personal Trainer.
Okay.
So this guy obviously is,
Now, that last one, the most recent one, I think UFC Personal Trainer did get some buzz.
Dude, it got buzz because it had a license. It was not a good game.
Mm-hmm.
All right, anyway, so this guy, they dig this guy up. And he says that they're not going to go to the Vita because everybody has already got an iPhone or an Android. So why would I want to?
Now, this seems like right up your alley.
And that just that just means a couple less SpongeBob games on the Vita. And I'm like, I don't see the downside to this.
Well, his argument is that people only want to carry around one thing. And I think when you're old as he is, that's probably true.
There's a lot to be said for that. I mean,
yeah, there is. Like, that's definitely.
I love just carrying around my iPhone, but also, you know, back when the DS Lite was the shit, I carried that around no problem.
Also, you know, William Miller, it seems like this would be right up your alley because you're such a, you know, just diehard Apple fanboy. It seems like you'd jump on this bandwagon.
Man, it would be. I tell you, if the Vita didn't look so damn cool. It's a cool looking tape. I want it.
I want it. William Miller on the Vita. I want it.
I want it.
Yeah, get GameSpot to write an article on that. No, we contacted developer William
really
Miller.
All I want to do is play that Ogre Tactics. That's it. That's all.
Was there an Ogre Tactics on it?
There's one on the PSP. And since A-Run stole my PSP, I don't have one anymore.
Wait, didn't they come out with old Final Fantasy Tactics on iPhone not long ago?
Yeah, but it's plagued by the same problems that the PSP port was. It's slow. It's like super, super slow in places, just almost unplayable. And
really?
I'm not going to spend $15 on a game that's laggy like that.
It seems like a lot of people are sort of having that argument of, oh, I'm not going to spend $15 on a game on my iPhone, but really...
Dude,
like,
I would spend more than that if the game was... You know, up to the same standards that I expect it to be on the iPhone. I'd pay $20 or $30 if the game was good, because it's one of my favorites. That's fine with me.
Well, just to diverge for a minute, let's say you're Squaresoft. All right, you've revamped this Final Fantasy Tactics game. Now, assuming they get these bugs and the slowness worked out, is it smarter to launch it at that premium price point of $15 as opposed to the, you know, rock bottom 99 cents that most games seem to be enjoying?
For Square, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
They've gotten away with it a couple times now.
Yeah, I mean, I bought that Final Fantasy III for the same price point, and... We've seen consistently that there is a market for games that are priced like this. Look at, you know, Infinity Blade or whatever high end.
Infinity
AAA
Blade comes down
thing.
To like a dollar every. They do sales on that game, and I think it's been a dollar a few times.
Exactly,
as well.
But when that thing first came out, I'm just saying, like, there is a market for that. You release it high and tentpole it, extend its life by dropping the, you know, waterfalling the price down. It's a good strategy, mm-hmm. and it works for them.
All right, so let's see. Anything else on the Vita here on this quote by Heavy Iron or whatever?
Where did they dig this guy up? Seriously, 20 years game development experience. All right.
They haven't done a single game that isn't a license.
Yeah, they're THQ house. Like they were first party or not first party, but a THQ in house.
They did an Evil Dead game back in 2001, but that's the only game that earns points with me.
Yeah, even then that's still a license.
Yeah, it's still a license, but you know, at least it's a cool license. It's not you know, SpongeBob.
All right, so now, Justin, before we move on here, do we have any more? Actually, I guess I can go now because I got a little bit of... I'll talk about the price drop here since you only went into it briefly. So at Gamescom, Sony cuts the price of the PS3 down to $249, announces Infamous 2 Festival of Blood. Ooh! have you tried the new Samuel Adams seasonal beer? Yes, Festival of Blood, my favorite. But, so it's going to be $250. Is that starting now? I really should have read this. Is that starting immediately, or is it going to be one of these DS things where they delay it a few weeks?
Why do you do that? Why do you announce a price drop and then delay?
Yeah, I don't know. We were talking about
because like if nobody's going to buy your thing if they're delaying the price drop, especially if it's like a couple weeks. Because you're just like, all right, I'll
immediate.
Wait.
Okay, it's immediate price drop. So that's not the case. They're not going to have that thing where Amazon just like stops selling them, so customers wouldn't be pissed. So. Immediately, it's $249. You know, I've been waiting to get on the PS3 train for a long time. I guess now's the time.
You don't have one yet?
You know, I got to go over to my brother's house and play it, but I still hadn't picked one up. You know, it's like, most of these tapes are the same. I played almost all these tapes. Anyway, let's see. What's like the newest bundle? Do they have any new bundles? I don't need to go look at that, see if there's any tapes worth getting. But I guess, yeah, if you're still holding out like me for the PS3, now would be the time to get one. Anyway, Just Vic, did you have any more Sony news on that on the press conference and all that?
I've got a little nugget here. So there's an announcement that the NFL is coming to the PS3. PlayStation has sort of teamed up with DirecTV to bring their NFL Sunday Ticket to the PS3.
That's big news. I've been
that's huge.
I've been saying, like, if I can get my football, I'm gonna drop cable.
Yep. Yeah. Same here. That's the only reason I haven't dropped it yet.
Oh man.
Now Sunday Ticket. So, that's the thing where you can get all the games in the NFL.
All the games. Yeah.
Okay. I need my college. Yes. It's not quite that yet. I need my college, but that's one step in the right direction.
Now, see, I lucked out there. I went to a college that had a shitty football team when I was there, so I don't really have to pay attention to it at all.
Mm.
But, yeah, this is all NFL games. If you're a DirecTV subscriber, I believe it's $50 for the season. If you're not a DirecTV subscriber, it's $3.39.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's hefty.
Ooh, Jesus.
That's a lot.
Yeah. So that's you know,
I guess people watch football.
It's almost almost as much as cable for the entire season.
Right.
I pay like $70 for my cable bill every month, so that's 5 months.
Yeah, that's not really much of a savings considering that
no.
Most of the bigger games will be on. Well, no, I guess they're not really on cable. They're on the big networks, but some of them are on cable, right? Yeah. I don't know how sports work, so you guys are gonna have to help me along here.
I mean, I guess if you're looking to get rid of your cable, I guess Bunny Ears is still a good solution to get most of the games anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. It depends.
It's not the best, but I don't know, for $300 for this, if I really want to cancel cable, I'll just gamble with an antenna.
Right. And look, I mean, are sports really that cool? I mean, maybe once sports are like NBA Jam, I'll watch them. I need fire. Or Blitz. Oh, dude, Blitz. Why hadn't they remade... Well, I guess they did remake Blitz a few times. But they weren't as good as the original.
Sports just needs to be like Evo.
Wait, how would that be like Evo? Like, what would that mean?
No, just have it all be, you know, Street Fighter and StarCraft, and that's all we need. All
right.
I don't need no football.
So, Speaking of things about the consoles and price drops and whatnot, the Wii is getting a redesign. This was announced at Gamescom. A streamlined hardware for the Wii is coming out for Europe later this year. Nintendo of America has no plans to bring the bundle stateside, but the updated Wii sits horizontal and loses its backwards compatibility with the GameCube. So I'm looking at a screenshot of it here. It's definitely smaller. In fact, it looks even smaller than the Wiimote. I don't know if this is exactly totally to scale here on the box art for it, but it's about the length of the Wiimote and perhaps about the height of the Wiimote. So, significantly smaller. It sits horizontal, doesn't play GameCube games. It seems, you know, I don't know. It seems like they're probably going to come out with the Wii U. I don't know. If I had to say what the Wii U costs when it comes out, I don't know. It's probably going to be expensive, but it seems like it's considering that's coming out next year. It'd be a little dumb to buy this reduced price Wii at this point.
Yeah, I mean it's kind of like that PS2 Slim. I think they're definitely going for longevity with the Wii.
Yeah,
and maybe even intending to have both the Wii and the Wii U, you know, exist concurrently. Sort of the way the PS3 and the PS2 are. I don't know.
I think I was reading this on my tweets the other day, but I think I was reading a tweet by the Meat Boy guys, and he said something like, there's only like three good games on the Wii, and it caused, you know, a lot of people were bitching and complaining about that. And I was thinking about that. That's kind of true. There's only like a small handful of like gotta have titles on the Wii at this point.
Pretty much. Resident Evil 4, which isn't really a Wii game at all, but...
Yeah, it's coming out on XBLA, like, I think by the end of this year.
Okay, well, I mean, what makes that game, though, was the Wiimote controls. True. I remember playing that, you know, first with a GameCube controller, and I was like, you know, I can see how this could be fun, but I don't know, it's really annoying. Like, it's like the, you know, like aiming the little laser dot around was a pain in the ass, and then I played with the Wiimote, and it just blew my mind.
Let's see, there's that one, I guess Twilight Princess, though.
No, I wouldn't call that a must-have.
All right, Mario Galaxy 1 and 2, Smash Brothers. I'm struggling to think of any more. I mean, I guess Wii Sports, and you know, I guess, right? Kind of.
No More Heroes, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. But even then, that you know, what Grasshopper's got, they already had that. Didn't you play that game, Justin Fick, that Grasshopper did? Or am I thinking of somebody else?
The
one with the skulls
ones?
And the dick jokes.
I played that one. Shadows of the Damned.
That's right. Shadows. The skulls and the dick jokes.
I guess like you have a gun called a boner.
So, I guess, you know, I guess this is, you know, really, I was also...
There's no reason not to iterate on the console.
Yeah, and, you know, if you don't have... If you don't have a Wii or you don't... Well, I guess this doesn't really affect the U.S., but if you don't have one of these consoles, it's so cheap, and you're getting in when all the games are pretty cheap, you might as well jump on board now than wait for the next thing and have to pay more dollars. But no backwards compatibility with GameCube does kind of blow.
Yeah.
I think I've used that, like, once, though. I mean, all the games that I wanted to play on that were on my GameCube, I can get on Virtual Console. It sucks I have to buy them again, but...
That's probably why... You know, that's probably part of the decision, because I can't imagine... Like, mechanically, that couldn't work anymore. I mean, maybe, but it seems like that's more motivated by a business decision than an actual physical limitation decision.
Yeah, it's probably cheaper. It's like...
They probably save a couple bucks on the console by leaving out that part.
Right. All right, Justin Fick, what else you got for us? Or Wee Mill, you got anything?
Nope.
Look, make your fart noises, all right?
All right, well, I got one more in that case. So, the Minecraft guys have been sued. So,
I was hoping we would talk about this.
Yeah, this is actually really cool. So, the Minecraft Mojang has been sued by Bethesda over their new game. So, Mojang is making a new game called Scrolls, and... So Bethesda sued them over the name, saying that it's a conflict with their franchise, The Elder Scrolls. So,
give us the deets. What are the details of this, Justin?
Okay,
because I've heard the story, but what have we got?
The lawsuit isn't the interesting part. The interesting part is Marcus Persons' response to this is he wants to settle the lawsuit with a Quake 3 deathmatch. So, he has challenged Bethesda to a 3-on-3 team deathmatch. Basically, it's two 20-minute games.
Oh, man.
He's like, dude, it is. It's he's like, our three best warriors against your three best warriors.
Those were the name. That's the words he used.
Warriors. Yeah, those are his words. Each side picks one map, and two 20-minute match. Or, yeah, 20-minute match on each. And then... highest frag total over the two games wins, and if Notch's team wins, Bethesda drops the lawsuit completely.
Dude, this is such an amazing
idea. Yeah, I love this. Bethesda wins, Notch has agreed to change the name of Scrolls to anything that Bethesda approves.
Nice, dude. This is so smart. This is so smart on Notch's part.
It's absolutely smart, because you know he knows that they're going to say no to this, but he's going to look like the good guy.
Right. Yeah. No matter what happens, if they say yes, it's huge marketing points.
If they say no, it's huge marketing points. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. No, this is brilliant.
So, dude, if they say yes, there is no way he's never going to win.
Are you? You think so?
No. You think Notch is going to win? Are you fucking?
I think they're gonna send their three best. Notch might very well be one of them, but because I don't know, like,
yeah, but doesn't Bethesda, isn't like, Bethesda
like Minecraft
also like
really does have that super responsive first person shooterness that Quake 3 has? Like, I don't know if you guys noticed that. Like,
doesn't
it's
isn't
really
Bethesda
responsive.
the isn't Bethesda the publisher of id stuff now, right? If I'm not mistaken,
ZeniMax. You're thinking of ZeniMax.
Yeah, oh, ZeniMax okay. is.
Well, then how do they have the license to? Oh, because Eldritch Scrolls. That's right.
Eldritch Scrolls.
I'm confusing this with Oh, what's it called?
Which, by the way, we're getting a little into Tim Langdell territory here with just one word.
Well, but you got to keep in mind that Elder Scrolls is like the biggest one, or at least arguably one of the biggest like titles in the video gaming industry at the moment, right?
Yeah, but here's the thing: how can you argue that there's confusion though? I mean, you have two, so you see, you know, Scrolls next to the Elder Scrolls 4 Oblivion.
I'm saying it's a stupid thing to argue, but I think you can argue that. I think it is possible for you to argue that and win. It's not a Tim Langdell like edge that, you know, means nothing. I think this is a little more feasible than that.
I don't know, man. It's still one word out of a, you know, the Elder Scrolls 4 Oblivion. That's what, you know, five words, one word out of that. So I don't know, man. And the thing is, like, they don't call it, you know, they don't call it Scrolls. They don't even call it the Elder Scrolls. They call it Oblivion. Let's play Oblivion.
That's true.
So I don't think there's any possibility for confusion here.
Well, no, the new one's called Skyrim, though. The new one doesn't have Oblivion anywhere in the name, I don't think. So, I mean, in the fact that it has the word Eldred Scrolls is kind of a big IP, like uniting IP for them. And in a sense, I don't know. I'm just saying they have some claim. It's not totally bogus.
Yeah, the series is called The Elder Scrolls. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's still just one word.
Lest we forget Elder Scrolls 3, Morrowind.
Yeah. So, but the thing is, like, I don't know. Still, like, people call those games Morrowind, Oblivion. They're calling the new one Skyrim. It's not Elder Scrolls 5.
Mm. Still, huge points for Notch, regardless how this turns out. Have they issued a response or anything?
They have not issued a response, and they have not issued they have not returned any requests for comments.
Now, see,
also, Notch has said that no matter what the outcome of the death match would be, he has agreed to put a disclaimer in his game and material saying that it's not related to Elder Scrolls in any way.
Hmm. That's cool. If I was Bethesda at this point, I would take them up on this offer, because that's the only way they can avoid looking silly at this point.
I think as of late today, they said no dice to this.
That's weak.
I'm pretty sure.
Oh, they probably, I would imagine, because it's not like, it's not gamers making this decision, right? It's legal teams.
It's a legal and like publicity team being, you know, it's not should we respond to this, it's how do we respond to this.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's no way in hell they're going to do it, although I would love to see them just send out, like, three fucking ringers.
Yeah, that'd be, man.
Yeah, if they were smart, oh, God, I wish they'd do it.
Not just so smart. I mean, what a great way, because he knows he's going to lose this, but what a great way to, like, make himself the folk hero in this situation. Like, he's getting everything he possibly can get out of this situation by doing something like this.
Hell, it's almost even worth, like, naming your game Scrolls just to do this.
Yeah.
I'm going to call my game Mario with three A's.
Mario. and the thing is, honestly, like, you know, Scrolls by itself is kind of a lame-ass name, too.
Yeah.
It really does seem like a working title.
That's true.
So, I mean, you know, this is Notch's chance to, you know, spice the title up a little bit and get some major PR points out of it.
Look, just go to the BDPE School of Name Design, all right? It's a noun verb or verb noun. I can't, which one was it? Just those two. Shoot dick or dick shoot. One of those.
Bone quest.
I don't know. I've got my suspect eye on this new Notch tape myself. I don't know about it.
Yeah, it's something like a card game or something, weren't you telling us about it?
I don't know about it. It's like it's a card game. Seems, I don't know about it.
Well, I mean, you know.
Yeah, I did that in Final Fantasy VIII, okay.
Tetramaster, I've done that game already. Thanks.
Well, they always like the hardest game that you make is your second.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially after a game like Minecraft. I don't think they should, you know, they should be looking to make another hit like Minecraft. I think that's impossible.
Yeah.
I think just make a good, quick, solid game.
Yeah.
And
look, this can be your calling all cars. Okay, it's fine. No one's looking. All right, so I forgot to mention this just real quick because I forgot to mention it, but Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword's coming out on November 20th. This is the new Wii, using the Wii Motion Plus, no less, the new Wii Zelda game that has supposedly been in development for over 2 years now. You know, it's a prequel to the classic N64 Zelda Ocarina of Time. So it's coming out, which it seems strange to me because I haven't seen a whole lot. I mean, this game has been rumored, but we haven't seen a whole lot out of it. Now today, or I guess yesterday at Gamescom, it's like, oh, and now it's coming out this year in like 2 months. I mean, is that, I don't know, is it just me? Have I been on out of the loop?
I mean, we saw some of it at E3. We saw some of it at the,
they showed it off
that press conference. But really, is anybody excited about this? I'm really not.
I'm cautiously optimistic. Very cautiously. Like I would love a new Zelda game that just, you know, blows my mind the way, you know, the way every, like, all of them did up until Twilight Princess.
Yeah, man, I tried to play Twilight Princess. I got about, I don't know, like the first dungeon, and I was just like, oh, I'm so bored of this.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly where I got to, is, you know, another game of go into the dungeon, get the item solves all the puzzles, the item kills the boss, and I'm like, okay, I'm done. So, I mean, I might go back to it, because I was thinking about playing through Ocarina of Time again, and Golden I was thinking Axe. About maybe playing the Master Quest, and I was like, well, Golden Axe.
Golden Axe.
So, you know, I was thinking about playing, shit, we lost Blake Buck.
Yo, whoop. Golden Axe.
Golden Axe.
All right, I tried to watch a trailer, and my whole machine lagged out.
All right, but yeah, I was saying, like, I wanted to play through Ocarina of Time again. I was thinking, like, I had that Master Quest disc. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, I could, you know, I could play through something that's a lot like Ocarina of Time, but just a little different, and then things are just moved around a little bit, and it's just ever so slightly different. And I stopped, and I was like, wait a minute. That's exactly what Twilight Princess is.
Yeah.
So when I go and do that replay, I might just throw in the Twilight Princess disc instead and just get that in.
I think the problem, we're just old. We're old, cranky men. That's what's... Ah, give me my Majora's Mask. I don't need this newfangled...
Dude, Majora's Mask is too new school for me. I hate that game.
Oh,
I fucking love Majora's Mask.
Nope.
Get out.
Nope.
did you play through it much, or did you just look at it and immediately dismiss it?
You know I didn't play that.
God damn it. All right, so it's coming out this November 20th. I watched a little of the trailer. It seems a little more interesting than Twilight Princess, I guess.
Supposedly, it's got the one-to-one movement with the sword and the Wiimote.
Ah.
I question, cool. Even if that works perfectly, I question how fun that is. Like, we haven't been able to see how fun it is, because it's like the carrot Nintendo keeps dangling in front of it. And Kinect, too. Like, oh, it's going to be one-to-one sword combat. We've been waiting for the 5-6 years we've had this motion control business. and nobody's been able to deliver. And I think when they finally do deliver, it's not going to be fun.
That's what, what is it? Fruit Ninja Kinect is supposed to kind of be like, right? Your hand's the sword, right? Has anybody played that tape yet?
No, but I've talked to people who said it's actually very satisfying and fun.
Okay, well, maybe it is possible.
And it might be the thing where it's like, if it's perfectly one-to-one, maybe that isn't fun, but there are ways to cheat to make it fun, because I know what, you know, if I were to have fun playing a one-to-one Wiimote sword fighting game, I know what that would feel like. And if they can just get that feeling in the new Zelda game, I'm all over it. I'll buy a copy and I'll play the shit out of it, and I'll just fucking whip this shit out of Octoroks until, you know, my hair falls out.
Man, dude, now you've been all this talking, just like, now I want to go back and play like Majora's Mask and Master Quest. Damn it!
like Zelda has a lot to offer. I mean, it's got a really cool feeling behind it, and, you know, like this, like that, just that sense of exploration. But it's just, you know, I think Twilight Princess just sort of, I don't know, they just filled in their bullet points for a Zelda game and then shipped it. And there really wasn't that sense of newness, that sense of just, where the fuck am I, all the other games could do.
I'll tell you what, maybe this week, I'm going to go and play Twilight Princess. I'm going to try and sit down and play it for about 10 hours and get, because I feel like we're not giving it a fair shot. I haven't really played it that much. Fick, you haven't played it that much. I've heard the first few hours are really bad. I'm going to go give it. Then again, how often? I was thinking about this right before the show. Blake says he's going to do a lot of things, and only a handful of them ever happen. But I am going to try and play it this weekend and maybe give us a tape review of it next week.
No, you're not.
Oh, you. A boy can dream, can't he? EA is not on Steam. I've only glanced over this article. No, wait a minute. Hey, let me actually read this article. We want Steam games. We want EA games on Steam, says Gabe Newell. Valve Studio head says that they are working actively to show the Battlefield 3 publisher that it makes sense to release games through their online portal. So over the past few months, a rift has opened between Valve and frequent publishers Electronic Arts for distribution over Steam. The dispute has led to EA pulling Crysis. That's right. They pulled Crysis 2 and Dragon Age 2 because, like, EA's trying to roll out their own store. So, because I was thinking, yeah, they have had EA games on Steam before, but I guess now they're kind of rolling that back in favor of their own portal, which is called Origin, I think. Am I making that up?
I think you're right.
Okay. But so apparently Battlefield 3 is a part of that plan as well.
It's either EA's or Ubisoft's.
Yeah. But Battlefield 3 is not supposedly going to ship on Steam, and Gabe Newell in between. No, I'm not going to make a fat joke about Gabe Newell. I'm too old for that now. In between bouts of ranch dressing, Gabe Newell said that bouts? What is that? That he's trying to track them back.
Is ranch dressing like a symptom of a disease?
No, he just eats it. Like
I just had a bout of ranch dressing.
No, like he's got a drawer that he just opens and it's just got 25 bottles of like Hidden Valley Ranch in there that he's just guzzling on. Oh, I'm an asshole. Anyway, you know, I can see why they're doing this. I can see why Valve's upset. But can EA reclaim some of the lost space? Can they still become a competitor in this digital distribution scheme on the PC?
I don't know. I got a feeling that they're just going to be, you know, EA games on their portal.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, well, they kind of, I mean, I don't see them competing with Steam. I see them competing with physical game stores. I see them competing with GameStop.
Maybe, but I don't know. I mean, people do. These are literally lost sales. I mean, they would have probably sold several hundred thousand copies of this game, if not millions, on Steam, and those are now going to EA, which I guess that's good for EA, and they don't have to, they have big more profits, but it's almost like, are we making too many of these? I mean, everybody's got one of these now. Ubisoft's got a marketplace. We can't even fucking remember their names. Hell, Tunsir Dennis started this shit years ago.
Dude, the Arabian still was ahead of his time.
Yeah, little did we know. Should have gotten on that gravy train soon.
But, I mean, honestly, I can just see, you know, if all these publishers make their own portals for buying online games, if enough of them do that, then, you know, GameStop just becomes a used game graveyard.
Yeah.
Well, and even that's going to go away when there's no more physical games to sell back to them. Like they're really trying to move away from physical media in general.
Especially with all these, you know, $15 fuck you charges. I've read just, I don't know if we may not have talked about this, but Rage is going to have a, you know, one-time redemption code you get for, I forget what the section was called, but it's some sort of sewer section that it said that most players wouldn't know about this section, but if you bought the game used, you might play through the whole thing and never notice it, but it's like a cool thing that if you do purchase the original game, you know, not a used copy, you get this cool extra thing. But I thought it was interesting because it's the first time I've ever seen single player content locked behind one of these paywalls.
That's interesting. No, I haven't heard of that yet.
Y'all haven't seen the like day one DLC? I mean, that's like essentially what this is.
That's true. I guess it has happened before. But yeah, same sort of thing. Anyway, so we got a quote from Newell here. It says, I don't think Valve can just pick up one thing. I cannot read when we do this show. I don't think Valve can pick just one thing and think the issue will go away if we fix that, Newell said, we have to show EA it's a smart decision to have EA games on Steam, and we're going to try and show them that. You know, and I think that's true. I think Steam does this better than anybody, and but I can also see EA's point as well of, why are we giving you money when we could do this on our own?
Yeah, I mean, EA definitely is big enough where they don't need Steam.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure Steam would help them a lot, but, you know, giving away like 30% or whatever to Valve for selling on their platform is too much of a hit for them.
Mm.
You know, I think maybe that, and also it kind of puts them under Valve's thumb. Like it's also a power position too. Like it's you know, is EA, you know, under Valve by going through Steam, or can they be an equal entity? Even though they're not as big in terms of power, in terms of what they can do with their own stuff, they retain the power over that stuff. So,
does anybody know the cut Steam takes? Like how that all works out in the distribution scheme?
I believe it's 30%.
Okay, well, that seems reasonable, but...
Don't quote me on that, but that's what I think it is.
That's about what, in Apple, something like that, for the App Store?
Apple's is 30%.
Okay.
And also, yeah, and that's also what XBLA used to be.
Okay.
What is it now?
I think now it's 70.
Woo! Damn. Anyway, yeah, Jess, Vic, you got any more news for us? That's all I got.
I got no more news.
Wee Miller, I know you got one up your sleeve somewhere.
Nope.
You know, I'm just going to get a button that says nope, and whenever you're not here, that'll just...
Nope.
It should be the William Miller soundboard.
Nope.
It's time for releases. All right, what we got?
All right, this week in releases, we got Deus Ex, Human Revolution, coming out on Xbox 360 and PS3. What do you guys think about this? Y'all have seen the trailer and all that. What do you think?
I've seen a little. I don't know what to think yet. Who's in this game? Eidos Montreal. What else have they done?
I'm not super excited about it.
Yeah, marginally. It looks better than the last, like, two Deus Ex games. Remember they had that one on, like, the original Xbox, I think? Then they had one on that came out, like, real early in the 360's life cycle. Maybe I'm making that up.
It's one of those things where if people, you know, if it comes out and everyone's like, oh my god, Vic, you have to play this game, then yeah, I'll go play it. Otherwise, I'm just going to sort of let it go.
They did Thief 4. Did anybody play Thief 4? Oh, that hasn't even been...
Yeah, I think that's not out yet.
That's not even out yet. This must be a new studio or a studio that's changed names or something.
Hmm.
But yeah, there's been a good bit of press, and the trailers and stuff all look pretty interesting, but at the same time, man, there sure are a whole lot of first-person shooters out there.
You're telling me. All right, speaking of which, we also got Call of Duty Black Ops Resurrection.
Oh, you weren't on the show we talked about. This is Zombies on the Moon, William Miller.
Ooh. Ooh, I do like that.
Building on the successful IP of the moon.
All right. And King Arthur Fallen Champions. Y'all heard about this one?
Nope.
Create your own legend of King Arthur Fallen Champions. It bridges the gap between King Arthur 1 and 2 with the tale of three brave souls, including blah, 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 blah. Yeah, this looks bad.
This looks real
bad.
That was the sphincter of judgment, lady and gentlemen.
Now.
And yes, lady was singular.
We've also got Street Fighter 3 Third Strike Online Edition. Now, this is the one that lets you recreate that Daigo,
Oh, yeah? Is this also the same team behind the Street Fighter 2 remake?
That's a good question. I would imagine so. It's probably the same team.
Okay, yeah, if it's the same team, the designer behind it is a guy by the name of David Serlin, who is a competitive Street Fighter player.
Wow.
So...
That's what you want, dude.
Yeah.
Dude, all of our combat designers are competitive tournament-level fighting game dudes.
Nice.
They rule. You got if you're gonna make a fighting game, man, that's like a prerequisite.
Did any of them go to Evo?
I don't think any of them went to Evo because we were all busy making this game. Oh. And I'm sure if they wanted to, they could have.
Dude, I don't know if I told you guys, Justin Fick's going to Evo next year.
No shit,
dude. I got my tournament stick all lined up. I got fucking.
You mean like a control stick? I thought that was like something you had to present when you entered. Oh, no. This is my tournament stick.
Here's my tournament stick. Actually, I think if you show up with a controller, they spit on your face. But no, dude, I don't care if I suck balls at Street Fighter by the time, you know, next Evo rolls around. It's in Vegas, dude. That's my turf. So I'm going back there. I was gonna walk into the Rio and be like, I want fight.
Dude, all right, I'm down. I'm going with you. Next year, all right. I'm going to have no experience at all. I'm going to be walking in there with the controller like, yeah, y'all didn't know about this shit. But
dude,
I was...
if we have any listeners who are tournament Street Fighter players that are like on the West Coast or whatever, dude, Evo.
Oh, BDPE meetup.
BDPE Evo Storm.
And hang on, before we say that, remember the last time we had a meetup, Blake Buck? It was weird.
It was weird.
It was weird. I mean, it was fun. I had a good time, but
it's weird.
It was weird. Some things like, just don't need to happen. Like,
yeah. Anyway, the Street Fighter. I know I was watching the video where they were talking about the Daigo recreation mode on it, and the guy who was narrating, who worked for Capcom, who was narrating like what's happening, he is the guy's voice in that YouTube video is him. So I'm pretty sure their team is built on these hardcore fans.
That's awesome. This wouldn't be, what is his name, Seth Killian?
I don't know. I can't read.
I know he's a Capcom guy, but I see him all over the place in these. He's a commentator for Evo. He was, you know, like he's sort of like, I guess he's sort of like their community manager or something.
Yeah,
but
and, you know, that's one thing that's really cool about the fighting game, and we talked about this a little before, but like, you know, the designers are so involved usually with these communities and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And not that other genres don't have it, but you really don't have like a genre that is quite as community oriented as the fighting game, sort of competitive fighting game world.
You know, I think what makes it that way is fighting games are made for those crazy mutant mega players, you know, like it's made for competitive players, you know, like the people who are on the top of their game, like the top tier stuff. That's who these games are being made for. And, you know, so there really aren't that many of them. You know, mm-hmm. So it's easy to, you know, to bring them in as playtesters, which I think Capcom did for Street Fighter 4. Like, all these top players, I think, got, you know, sneak previews of the game by coming in and playing it and testing balance and all that cool shit. So, you know, that's how they were able to make Street Fighter 4 take over for, you know, every other Street Fighter game.
Now, not to be a dick, but I'm looking at these screenshots. The graphics in this game, on this release, look a little weird. Because it's like the characters themselves are kind of the low-res pixel art from the original, but then the backgrounds are like all the bars and menu bars have been kind of up-res to HD. I don't know. It feels a little strange, the meshing of new and old elements. Maybe this is an old screenshot I'm looking at, too.
Yeah, I think the remake of 2 kind of had that, too. Like, it was sort of... I think the sprites were redrawn with, like, the exact same animations, but in HD.
Yeah, which is a little weird to like, especially if the backgrounds aren't HD. Mm-hmm. You know, it's sort of a little strange, but we'll see. That might not be the case when it comes out. Anyway, otherwise on releases, nothing.
Crap.
Let's just throw those away. All right, it's time for tapes.
All right, y'all. I got a tape.
What?
I came prepared.
All right. Hey, what you got for us, son?
Let me get my website up here.
Don't right. Just read a game review off a website.
No. I want to make sure I give a shout out to the guy that made this tape because it's really awesome. I was on Twitter and I saw Adam Atomic's Twitter. He's the guy that did, you know, made Flixel and Cannonbolt and all that, you know, Gravity Hook. And he's been, his jam this week has been this game called The Last Rocket on the iPhone.
Oh, I played that heat too.
I downloaded this game and it is so clever and awesome.
Oh, yeah. I saw it.
It's by a guy named Sean Inman. And it's like $2 on the App Store. Go get it right now. It is so good. It's a platformer, but it doesn't have any, you know, like a lot of games that people have been trying to shoehorn games of genres we're used to. onto that platform. Like, oh, I'm going to put a virtual joystick on here and some virtual buttons, and it's going to be a, you know, Nintendo platformer. Like, this game is a platformer. It's a puzzle platformer, but it's so well executed and fits the platform so well. Like, you're not fighting with the controls. It's very natural, and it feels great. And it's got this great personality. It's all 8-bit looking, and, you know, I like that. So it's really good. But you're the you play as a rocket. You are the last one, as the name suggests. And you can, like, tap the screen to blast off. And you could tap the screen while you're in the air to flip and drive the other direction. And that's about it. Everything else is, like, interacting with the environment. It is very, very cool.
I think, yeah, the way I would describe it is kind of if VVV was a puzzle game.
Yeah, I saw it because
it's not quite that hard.
It's similar to VVV.
It's not that kind of difficulty. And it, also, the graphics are better than VVV. But it's still that kind of, I guess, that kind of game, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I played through, I actually beat the game, too. It's sort of, it gives you, you know, eight worlds of 8 levels apiece. Each world introduces some new game element that mixes things up a little bit. And, it's really cool. I mean, like, throughout the game, you're collecting gear. So each level is a screen, and you kind of have to, like, flip and turn your way to this exit, and then collect gears along the way. And how good of an ending you get, depends on how many gears you collect throughout the whole game. So
a lot of them are hidden in very clever ways and hard to get. And another thing is, like, once you beat the game, there are these challenges you can do. And one of them is play and get the least amount. Get, like, under 25% of the gears in the game. Hmm. And that's a lot harder than you think, because you got to, you know, play the game with a whole different set of patterns. And it's a lot harder than playing through the game, you know, the first time around.
Yeah, that kind of reminds me of, I was trying to beat Splosion Man the other day before I got to Miss Splosion Man. And one of the achievements in it is not to kill any scientists in a level, which they put them all in a level. You know, and it's really hard because whenever you move, you know, you're blowing up. So I think that's a clever thing to do.
I think my only gripes with the game, with The Last Rocket, are sort of the game has to be done in one whole playthrough. So if you're trying to go and get all the gears like I did, if you fuck up and accidentally go through an exit door, you have to start over. Which was really annoying. And then my only other gripe with it is, for some reason, when you're flipping in midair, there's a delay with how quickly the rocket flips after you tap the screen. And he kind of flips, you know, maybe 30 to 40 pixels after you tap the screen. And it's really annoying, and it's hard to aim. And I've lost, like, I think, you know, 90% of my deaths were from the fact that the fucking rocket didn't flip when I told it to flip, and that just drove me insane.
Yeah, that's kind of annoying. I've noticed that too.
So, I mean, those are my only two gripes with the game. It's, you know, it's definitely worth the $3.
Also, this game has fallen off the charts, because I was just trying to find it on the charts, because I remember it was like in maybe top 50, top 30 or something last week. Not even the top 300 now.
I mean, it's one of those. I mean, also because it released at $3 and it's probably stayed $3, it's, you know, it doesn't really have the sticking power that a 99-cent game would.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I mean, that's unfortunately the price of doing that, because I know a lot of indie iOS developers do that indie premium $3 price point and don't budge, which, you know, is cool for the long tail, but, you know, you slip right off the charts like a motherfucker. So it's an interesting trade off.
Just Vic, do you have a tape for us, or was that your tape?
That was one of my tapes. I got two more though.
Okay, Lemos.
So one of them was Insanely Twisted Shadow Planet. I bought that heat now that I bought Bastion. Now that I beat Bastion, sorry. So I got that heat and played through. I'm about like 60% of the way through Insanely Twisted Shadow Planet. Very fun and satisfying game.
Okay.
It's good. The demo is sort of like the second or the third zone of the actual game. So the actual game, when you start it, it starts off on your home world, and there's all these other little ships flying around. They all get smashed, and you know, it's a cool little intro.
Let's just say I'm going to buy this. Should I start by playing the demo, or just go ahead and buy it and start at the real start of the game?
If you're going to buy it, no matter what, just buy it and do the real start.
Okay.
Because some
XBLA games, like, you get to the end of them, and then you can purchase it, and it saves, and you can keep going. Whereas other ones, you'll have to.
I don't know how that would work with this, because you kind of start maybe, you know, a couple, you know, maybe like 15, 20 minutes into the game with a demo. Mm.
Okay.
So it kind of mixes around the. Actually, you know what? It's actually completely different. There's weapons in the demo that you don't get for a long time in the regular game. So it is a totally different experience. I don't think it will wrap over and carry over at all. So I'd say just buy it and play the game for real. But it's really cool. I mean, the silhouette style, I mean, it's been done a couple times before, but in Shadow Planet, it feels really cool and well done. It's very nicely animated. It's very smooth. It's very, I keep using the word Tim Burton-esque, but it kind of is. Like, just the way stuff moves and the way it, you know, like there's all kinds of tentacles and shit. It feels very organic and awesome.
Damn it. Now I gotta fucking buy that game and play. Justin Fick, look what you've done. I'm broke, son. Can't be buying all these Xbox games.
You know, you gotta do Blade Bucks. You need to have a rule is buy one game for every two games that you beat.
No, I thought you meant the other way, because that's the way my life has been going. I buy two games for every
one game that you take out of the shrink wrap.
No, I'm telling you, dude, what gets me, because I don't think I bought a box game in a while, but these, oh, there's so much cool shit on the, we should change this to, like, best damn, like, yeah, mid-level indie game cast ever. Because, like, we talk about, you know, Battlefield 3, we're like, fuck that, whatever. Oh, Insanity Twisted Shadow Planet, let's go get that right now.
Well, the thing is, like, my opinion is, that's kind of where the future, to me, where the future of the industry is, you know, those mid-level indie games. You know, I mean, there's, you know, you, like, at the very top, you know, of things financially, you have the giants like EA and Activision making Call of Duty and Medal of Honor and Medal of Duty and all that crazy shit. And you have, of course, the social game industry, which is, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's its own money-making machine. And it, you know, it's kind of doing its own thing, and you know, and on the, you know, like on the other side of the spectrum, like there's that whole huge rush of indie developers, which is very cool. They're making really cool artsy stuff that they can't make it sell. But it's in the middle. It's those indies that have either figured out how to sell their shit good, or you know, the guys at the big studios that have said fuck this, let's start our own studio. You know, let's. You know, and they've seen how things work, and they can make their, you know, smaller stuff. So I think that's really where all of the innovation is coming from. I mean, you get stuff like Shadow Planet and Bastion and From Dust, like three very, very original, cool games that would never have flown as a disc title. But they're all, you know, like they're all at least must play, if not must buy. Like Bastion is a must buy as far as I'm concerned. You know, Shadow Planet's a must-buy. So, I mean, it's like, you know, that's really where I feel the energy to push the industry forward is. Rant over.
Nice. All right. So, let's see. Do you want to go on to your next one, or do you want me I got one I could do real quick.
All right, yeah, do yours, and then I'll go into my other one.
Mine's real simple. I found out it from Ben Buck. I don't know. He found this game somewhere on the internet. Because I just got my ROM box working again. I broke it when making this video the other day. I swear to God, this video is coming out.
No, it's not.
But you know, that's... I have one button that's nope, and then I'll have another button that's no, you won't, Blake Buck. And it'll be like you're here all the time. It's called... Okay, so this game is on... You can find it on MAME or, you know, arcade. You won't be able to find a real arcade of it, I'm sure, because it was super rare. But Ben Buck found it on the internet somewhere, and I looked it up. It's called Ninja Baseball Batman. Have you guys heard of Ninja Baseball Batman?
No, but I love it already.
All right, now, contrary to its name, it is not about, Batman, the Dark Knight,
yeah,
in any
yeah.
sense of the form. Batman refers to baseball bat. And so you are a ninja who is also a baseball player, and I guess a man. And it's a four-player side-scrolling beat-em-up from the early 90s.
It's not even a baseball game. This is wonderful. No,
it is insane. You fight baseballs. There are evil yeah, baseballs. Yeah, yeah. The art style is just insane. Like, you're going around beating baseballs and catchers and stuff.
This is fucking awesome. Oh,
at one point, in the first level, so you're going around, you're fighting these, like, pitchers and stuff, and then you get on a plane, right? And then the plane takes off, and you're fighting in the plane. Then you're fighting a smaller plane inside of the larger plane. It is absolutely ridiculous, and it's also long as shit. Like, I was way into it, but man, I played it for like, because these old beat 'em up games, and they're intense. You play it for like 30 minutes, and like, you're wore out. I didn't even get halfway through it. This is a monster of a game, at least lengthwise. But so I had my save state going. I'm gonna get back to the rest of Ninja Baseball Batman.
This looks awesome. I'm reading this here. There's four characters. There's Captain Jose, Twin Bats Rhino, Beanball Roger, and Stick Straw.
Yeah, the big guy, he's my favorite. He's a big fat guy. And when he goes, with his big power attack, he just pulls out a giant baseball and hits you in the face with it.
Dude, so, I'm gonna be Twin Bats Rhino.
Yeah, dude, if you should definitely check out I'll put a totally illegal ROM link somewhere on the show notes if you want to check out Ninja Baseball Batman.
Yeah, it's all good. Fun. Wouldn't be the first time.
I can't imagine, like, cease and desist. We were just about to re-release Ninja Baseball yeah. Batman for Western audiences.
Who put this out?
iRim is what it says at the bottom.
Okay. Yeah, they're still around, right? They're doing all the R-Type remakes.
Are they? Okay.
We should write them.
Yeah, let's get the Ninja Baseball Batman guys on the show.
We want sequel.
Go. All right, Jessica, you got one more tape for us, right?
I got one more tape. After that whole rant about the, you know, non-disc games being the future of the industry and shit, my other tape was a disc game.
Uh-oh.
But it's a I think this one warrants an exception. This is Earth Defense Force Insect Armageddon. So finally dove into this heat, and I'm liking it so far. So it's got the same gameplay as the first one. So I mean, they didn't fuck with that too much. I'm only a couple missions in, so I mean, they could fuck the whole thing up later. So
yeah, because I've read some negative reviews on this. I'm curious to see how this pans out.
There's a couple parts of it that kind of make me sad. So like the gameplay is there, but the completely over the top shitty engine effects are all gone. Because this is basically Earth Defense Force with a nice budget. So everything's clean.
What do you mean by shitty engine effects?
So, like, when you kill an ant, it just stiffens up and it becomes a flying static 3D model that just bounces randomly on the terrain.
Right. You're saying that was in the original, right?
That was in the original. Or the right. particle effects that were so sloppily done that they just take up the entire screen.
Right.
It's just that over-the-top, just it felt so tongue-in-cheek, and it was really cool in the original, and it's completely cleaned up in the second one.
Because it was there was a camp like charm to it, and I guess that's sort of gone in this then.
Yeah, so like, you know, now when you kill ants in this one, they, you know, there's really no huge splatter spray of shit to let you know that you killed something. It just sort of curls up and dies, and then it sort of it does like a shader effect, and it kind of like fizzes out. It looks very modern and very clean, and it's not as cool as the original. And for instance, the explosion effects on the robots. Like, if you remember the robots killing one in the original one, you get a huge big ass explosion, and then the robot falls, and there's another one that just fills up your whole screen.
Yeah, and the whole frame rate just chugs like shit when all this is happening.
So, I mean, there's probably no good thing about that in terms of, like, performance or, you know, I'm sure,
in terms of, like, kind of appeal and theme and personality in a way.
It was, yeah, it had a, it, there's a panache to it almost. And it's, mm-hmm. you know, and how tongue in cheek and sloppy it was. But, you know, and so like, but like now like the robots all have like dodging moves and it, it doesn't feel like a huge monster anymore. It feels just like, I don't know. It just feels like a big enemy. I don't know. It's not the same.
It's just sort of like, Ninja Baseball Batman, sort of the same thing. The game runs really slow, and I don't know if it's my machine or not, but the slowdown is part of the charm, right? There's all these fucking ridiculous enemies, and the thing starts... I mean, there's something to be said about, like, I don't know if you want to intentionally make your game chug, but there's something kind of appealing to it, the fact that, like, I don't know, you're getting this sort of overload of an experience. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's
that just meant it was hard. Like back in the day when the game started to chug, you knew it was but like that jungle level in ActRaiser. That thing drops like half the frame rate as soon as you start because there's so much shit on the screen and you know it's going to be tough. So like if it's sort of a retro styled game and it starts to chug a little bit because there's so many mans on the screen, you know it's about to get tough.
Yeah, I mean it's kind of like an unintentional bullet time.
Yeah.
Think about, you know, like specifically Gradius 3 on the Super NES, one of my favorite shooters of all time, does that a lot. Like once you get a shitload of lasers and there's a shitload of enemies and stuff and you start firing around and you know the game slows down and it's, you know, it's kind of, you know, it slows down at the points where, you know, that tend to be the hardest when there are the most objects on the screen, and that's when you kind of, you know, you don't complain about the slowdown. It's actually kind of beneficial.
Right.
You know, and I mean, like, think back to the, you know, like the NES Advantage. Remember it had the slow-mo button?
Oh, yeah. Right.
Which
pause and unpause.
Yeah.
What is this?
It was pretty much just a automatic rapid-fire start button.
Yeah, it was an old controller you could buy, yeah. And it would just pause and unpause the game really fast, and they called that slow-mo.
What if you had a pause screen? Like, wouldn't that flicker?
Then it would not work. Yeah, then it would flicker.
Not compatible with slow-mo.
Well, it worked better on some games than others.
Yeah, or like Zelda would, like, just seizure back and forth between the main screen and the upper sub-screen. We just send you into fits of epilepsy.
Oh, and can I just say something about this? This is a strange point, but I was playing a ROM of the Zelda that came... Oh, Link's Awakening? And in the color version, the original Link's Awakening had the slide up on the pause screen. Uh-huh. And on Link's... The remake they made a few years later, it's just the flash to the screen. It still makes the slide up noise, but it doesn't actually animate. Hmm. Faux pas. Go back and fix it, Nintendo. Anyway, I'm totally got off topic. What are we talking about? Ninja Baseball Batman.
It could.
No, but what were we
talking about? Oh, we're talking about the new EDF. So okay, so yeah, so the gameplay is still there, but it lost a lot of its tongue in cheek charm. I think, like, I mean, the dialogue is still there, but they kind of know they're trying to be cheesy now. I mean, there are a couple cool references in there. Like, one of the guys actually says, "Welcome to Earth," which I appreciated.
Is it Will Smith?
Fucking punches you in the head. Yeah.
I don't know if it's Will Smith, but it's one of your black teammates.
Okay.
So
close enough.
Okay, here's a great example of that. In the original EDF, everybody would just say, like, "Let's go." But they would map it to all the people that were with you. And so, just strangely, all at once, you would hear one sample of, "Let's go, yeah," said by 20 guys at the exact same time, which is very, very strange.
Yeah,
let's go, in the same voice. Yeah. And that was, again, the same way, that was part of its charm, right? It was so kind of shitty and strange, but fun.
Yes, so far the dialogue is also cleaned up, but it hasn't lost its charm, really. Like... Okay. It feels a lot more mission-y, there aren't as many random chitter-chatter messages as before. It's a lot, and there is a lot of back and forth between you and HQ. Like, your guy actually talks now, and he sounds, I think it is the voice actor, but he sounds a lot like Master Chief, which I also appreciate. Although it does feel a little weird to be speaking, but I'm not down on the dialogue. I like that so far. The other thing I like is you can pick your armor now.
Ooh.
So you aren't just one guy that upgrades the same old weapons and the same old armor. You can pick one of four types. So there's soldier, which is kind of like your regular EDF guy. There's a tactical armor, which is a little heavier armored, but it mostly deals in like mines and turrets and that kind of stuff. There's fly armor, which is sort of light armaments, but you get a jetpack and you can fly around. And then there's just like a heavy, which is all the major fucking weapons. So I picked fly armor, and it's really cool. Like, because I mean, one of the things that pissed me off about EDF was if you don't have something that takes down buildings, you basically get stuck on fucking everything. Like if you don't bring a rocket launcher and you need to get from point A to point B, and there's shit in your way, you're fucked. But now you can just hit left trigger and you just jetpack on rooftops, and you can sort of fly around and. You don't get much to start, but you can upgrade it, and it's a lot of fun to fly around and shoot shit from the air. I like it a lot. So, it's one of those things where it's like, it's still a good game, I'm still enjoying it, but it's like going from Guitar Hero 2 to Guitar Hero 3. Like, gameplay-wise, they make improvements, you know, aside from Guitar Hero 3 boss battles, which we're just forgetting about. but it's sort of... You know, it's kind of lost
it's missing
that camp.
The soul.
It's missing a little bit of the soul. So, okay. I mean, maybe it'll pick up later. I'm not that far into it, but those are just my first impressions.
All right. But, well, you keep us updated on that next week, and I'll update you guys on the entirety of Twilight Princess.
Totally, I played it for 10 minutes. It bad. I quit.
And I guess let's move on to feedback. We already talked about the white specs. I already got that one. Oh, I sent you guys this one already, but I'll send it again. Did either of you read that email I sent you?
About the emulation?
Yeah.
Pretty old news. People have been trying to do that for a long time. Blake sent us an email about Cycle Perfect SNES emulation, which our friend Richard Bannister has been trying to do for forever.
I was going to get Vic to read the email first before we get into discussing
it. Let me pull it up here.
Well, I guess the email doesn't really say anything now that I actually read it. God damn it. Well, anyway, continue, William Miller.
It's Blake, you'll like this, link, Pete B.
Damn it.
Thank you, Pete B.
Okay, but
yeah,
well.
Yeah, continue.
That's it. It's just, it's hard, is the what the article came down to. We take emulators for granted, but they're, like, you get SNES 9X or you get ZSNES or something like that. And those emulators are really good. Like, you can play your games and they feel like the old, you know, playing it on an actual console. But in actuality, those programs are taking a lot of shortcuts. They're doing a lot of, I don't know the technical details, but they're not cycle accurate. And so what the article was about was this, trying to build a cycle accurate SNES emulator is actually way, way harder than you might think it is. You need a really beastie computer. You need a lot of RAM. Actually, it's not really the RAM. It's the clock cycles.
Like, yeah,
you need
the CPU.
A really fast CPU, 3 gigahertz or better. And it's not something you can multi-thread, so dual core or anything like that doesn't really help you. So I thought it was really interesting.
The other thing that I noticed, too, is that, for instance, there are games that came out. Like, the article mentioned a Super NES... The Super NES Speedy Gonzales game, the only reason that game worked, the only reason that the tape worked is there was one point where it takes advantage of a weird hardware edge case in the Super Nintendo that when they made emulators, there's no hardware. Like, it, you know, it when done in software, this does not occur. Like, it's correct. Like, it was a bug in the Super Nintendo that caused Speedy Gonzales to work.
Function properly.
Yeah, to function properly. And then when the bug is removed, the game breaks. And there's actually a level that you cannot progress any further.
Yeah, and they also said, like, even games like Zelda's, Ocarina of Time? No. What is it? Link to the Past, I believe. Yeah. Link to the Past, that when the Triforce sort of floats in on most emulators, that's actually rendered a little too fast compared to the original, just because of like how it processes the graphic scaling.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's you play it on I think I've seen this too. I think when you play it on an emulator, like the Triforce actually converges before it finishes spinning, and I think on the tape, it's all choreographed and it's all lined up right. I think it's something like that, but a lot of these emulators get you 95-99% of the way there, but you know, that extra couple percent will, you know, break a couple games, and that's important because we're quickly getting to the point where the physical media for these games is deteriorating.
Right.
You know,
the article also talked about how they're trying to model, like, physically model, digitally model in the computers exactly what these like old PCB boards would have been, like what the exact transistors and stuff, and they talked about how they did that for Pong, and it took so long to do because you had to model all this stuff. But it's like one of the only few games that's ever been done on, and after a while, it's going to be impossible to do. They said, you know, doing a true like machine level emulation would never even be possible in our lifetimes for something like N64.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I mean, and I sort of see what they're saying. It's important to preserve the accuracy of these. But at the same time, I believe that a video game, now we're getting real technical, but a video game is a work of art, right? And I don't think, I mean, sure, the mechanics of its components is important. But in a lot of sense, the designers were abstracted from that in some senses. And like, I don't know, I just think the idea of the game itself is what matters. Not so much like the physical shape and exact way it worked.
Yeah, I think...
I don't know. I think that to a degree, that's fine. And maybe this analogy doesn't quite hold up, but it's kind of like not being able to ever read a book or watch a movie in its original language after it's translated. I mean, that's kind of a drastic statement. But imagine if we like, you know, we took all the Kurosawa movies and we deleted their 35mm prints. All we had was the DVD version. Like, that's not great. It's compressed. It's fine on a TV, but at the same time, you kind of lost something
in
the translation.
My point is that, okay, I believe, now this is getting real, real esoteric, but that if a video game, any work of art, I believe not only transcends its medium, but also in a way its creator, right?
Yeah.
Like, you can make something, like, you know, I hate to always pick on George Lucas for this, but he made something, it becomes sort of a part, he makes Star Wars, it becomes a part of the American group mind, and then to go back and change that, and like, even, you know, Greedo shot first, this whole debate, right, is you're trying to retroactively change what we all perceive as being this work of art, you know, and it's sort of like, in a way, Star Wars is more important than the medium at which it was originally printed on, it's more important than what... you know, George Lucas thinks about it. And in the same way, I think that these games are kind of more important than the exact, you know, thing that it was printed on when it came out.
Yeah, I think for a game to be, in my opinion anyway, preserved, it needs to preserve the feeling that you get when you play the game. So, for instance, I'll play through, you know, Final Fantasy II, and I feel a certain way when I play it. Or, you know, or for instance, a good example is Chrono Trigger. I never played Chrono Trigger on the original SNES tape. I played that for the first time on an emulator. And at the time, the emulator didn't do the sound quite right. For some reason, I think I was using SNES 9X, and a lot of the ripping sounds, like, you know, swords, you know, sword hits and... you know, explosions and stuff like that came out very sine wavy and very
right.
Not rough. It sort of changed the sound of them.
Yeah, because supposedly that's one of the hardest areas to emulate is a lot of these old hardware, you know, analog synthesis.
But I was able to play through the entire game of Chrono Trigger, which with this big change, like it was actually, you know. It was jarring to me. I knew this wasn't the, you know, how it was supposed to sound. But I was able to play through the entire game of Chrono Trigger and felt the way I was supposed to feel, you know, And, you know, I
just to throw a hypothetical at you here. What if everybody, just for whatever reason, had played Chrono Trigger the way you played it, the wrong, incorrect way that has these wrong sounds? But that's what everybody remembered. Wouldn't that be what Chrono Trigger is? Right? That's what Chrono Trigger is now. It's not the original thing that no one ever played. It's this thing that everyone knows. That's what it is. That's sort of what I'm getting at, is that, like, art is sort of defined by the experience the users have with it, not some, like, you know, pristine original thing that can never be touched. It's a more organic thing.
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah, it's kind of your perception of the thing. But for instance, you know, SNES 9X has gone and patched, you know, made new versions that fix that sound bug, and I've also played it on the DS, which is another port, and the sound is fixed there. So, I mean, it's not one of those things that's gone forever. It's just, right. You know, at the time I played it, you know, I would say, you know, 90 to 95% accuracy. And, you know, it was able to convey its message to me just fine. Another example where it actually did break the game for me. I was playing through Final Fantasy V for the first time on an emulator. And same one, SNES 9X, and it had trouble doing transparency. It couldn't do it.
Yeah, I've run into that bug before.
So there is one section of the game where you're sort of in a pirate ship graveyard, and there's a bunch of different sections where you have to go underwater. But in the SNES tape, there's like a half-transparent water layer that's over the top of everything, and in the emulators, it's completely opaque and you can't see shit. So that's actually, you know, that's a situation where the accuracy prevented me from going through. Right. And I had that, you know... I forget what I did to fix it. Either I got another emulator or I got a patch or something that let me play the rest of the game. But, you know, that's the point where I'd say the game was not preserved.
Right. Sure. So it's an interesting debate. I think it's a pretty interesting article Pete B. sent our way. I'll tell you what, if you want to read more into this beast nest and all that kind of stuff, I'll put a link up in the show notes and you guys can read this entire article and send us your take on it. Yeah. Feedback at bestdamnpodcastever.com. William Miller, what you got for us?
We don't give a shit about that. All right. Dear Holy Trifecta, Media Cat writes, I come to you with my most humbleness to ask for one thing. Shirt, spelled S-H-U-R-T in all caps. Where da shirts at? I need some butter buck on my chest to scare all the bitches away.
Now, realize that that's... one vowel away from both shirt and shart. Which do you want, yes, sir? Is.
Well,
we can provide either of those on your chest.
To promote some of this godly goo that comes in my ears once a week to the world, get that sushi boy to sort it all out already. I like how it's just his job.
Yeah, I like how the listeners know we won't do it. And are telling us to get other people to do it.
As always, best wishes to you lovely chaps. Sips on his fine British tea. Love your loyal Mongler Media Cat, Kendall Blake Smart.
Yeah!
No, wait. You know what? Didn't Sudo Sushi already put up a store for shirts?
You know,
I've seen some.
He put up a store, and it was in the works, and then I think he got busy with stuff, and... I don't know. I hadn't checked in with him on it in a couple of months, so it's going to be ready tomorrow, guys. It's shipping out. But yeah, I'll talk to Sudo Sushi, or you know what? I don't have to. He'll listen to this. Sudo Sushi, send me an email. Laziest assholes ever. Like, you know how we communicate? You know why, like, we had a problem with the edit last time? Because this is the only way I communicate with Craig Reed, is, like, via the show itself. Damn it, we need to work on this. All right, well, that does it for this week of the Best Damn Podcast Ever. What do you guys think about that?
Good show.
Good show.
You got any feedback for us? It's feedback@bestdamnpodcastever.com or call our seldomly used now listener line at 845-BATTLE-9. We gotta thank Craig Reed again for editing these shows and putting up with me shitting on him for no reason. Sudo Sushi for getting that new store up and running right now. Do it! And TK and, you know, MediaCat, PB, everybody, thanks for listening. And you, whoever you are, nice work. So from all of us here at the Best Damn Podcast Ever, I'm Blake Buck.
I'm William Miller.
I'm Justin Fick.
And we'll see you next time.